And now it's time for the Northern Storyteller. Good morning, I'm Asia Rizumi. Today I'll be reading from the book Tatterhood and Other Tales, edited by Ethel Johnston Phelps. The Squire's Bride. There was once a very rich squire who owned a large farm, had plenty of silver in his money chest and gold in the bank, but there was something he had not, and that was a wife. One day, a neighbor's daughter was working for the squire in the hayfield. He liked her very much, and as she was only a poor farmer's daughter, the squire thought that if he only mentioned marriage, she would be more than glad to accept at once. So he said to her, "I've been thinking I want to marry." "Well, one may think of many things," said the lassie as she stood there. She really thought the old fellow ought to be thinking of something that suited him better than getting married to a young lass at this time of his life. "I was thinking you should be my wife," said he. "Oh, no, thank you," said she, "and much obliged for the honor." The squire was not used to being refused, and the more she refused him, the more he wanted her. But the lassie would not listen to him at all. So the old squire sent for her father. He told the farmer to talk to his daughter and arrange the marriage. If he would, the squire would forgive the farmer the money he had lent him and would give him the piece of land which lay close to his meadow in the bargain. "Oh, yes, yes, be sure, I'll bring the lass to her senses," said the father. "She's just young and does not know what's best for her." But all his coaxing, all his threats, and all his talking went for naught. She said she would not have the old miser if he sat buried in gold up to his ears. The squire waited and waited, but at last he got angry. The next day he visited the poor farmer and told him that he had to settle the matter at once if he expected the squire to stand by his bargain, for now he would wait no longer to be married. The farmer knew no other way out, so he agreed to let the squire get everything ready for the wedding. Then, when the parson and the wedding guests had arrived, the squire would send for the lassie as if she were wanted for some work. When she reached him, the squire thought, she would be so awed by the fine bridal clothes and the wedding guests that she would agree to be married, for he could not believe a farm girl would really refuse a rich husband. When the guests had arrived, the squire called one of his farmhands and told him to run down to his neighbor to ask him to send up immediately what he had promised. "But if you're not back with her in a twinkling," he said, shaking his fist at him, "I'll..." He did not even finish, for the lad ran off as if he'd been shot at from behind. "My master has sent me to ask for that which you promised him," said the lad when he got to the neighbor. "But pray, lose no time, for master's terribly busy today." "Yes, yes, run down to the meadow and take her with you," answered the girl's father. The lad ran off, and when he came to the meadow, he found the daughter raking hay. "I am to fetch what your father has promised my master," said the lad. "Uh-huh," thought she, "is that what they are up to?" And with a twinkle in her eyes, she said, "Oh, yes, it must be that little bay mare of ours, I suppose. You'd better go and take her. She stands grazing on the other side of the pea field." The boy jumped on the back of the horse and rode her home at full gallop. "Have you got her with you?" asked the squire. "She's down at the door," said the lad. "Take her up to the room my mother had," said the squire. "But master, how can I?" said the lad. "Do as I tell you," roared the old squire, "and if you can't persuade her, get someone to help you." When the lad saw his master's face, he knew it would be no use to argue. So he went and got all the farmhands together to help him. Some pulled at the head of the mare, others pushed from behind, and at last they got her upstairs into the room where they tied the reins to a bedpost. The wedding finery, with crown and flowered wreath, was spread out on the bed, all ready for the bride. "Well, that's done, master," said the lad when he returned. He mopped his brow. "That was the hardest job I've ever had here on the farm." "Never mind, never mind. You shall not have done it for nothing," said the master. He pulled a silver coin out of his pocket and gave it to the lad. Now send the women up to dress her. But I say, master, how can they? None of your talk, cried the squire. Tell them to dress her in the wedding clothes and mind not to forget either wreath or crown. The lad ran into the kitchen. Listen here, lasses, he called out. The master's gone daft. You're to go upstairs and dress up the bay mare as a bride. I suppose he wants to play a joke on his guests. The women laughed and laughed, but ran upstairs and dressed the horse in all the finery that was there. And then the lad went down and told his master that all was ready, complete with wreath and crown. Very well, bring her down. I'll meet her at the door myself, said the squire. There was a loud clatter and a thumping on the stairs as the mare was led down. Then the door was thrown open to the large room where the squire waited with the wedding guests. In walked the bay mare, dressed as a bride, with the wreath of flowers falling over one eye. The parson gaped in astonishment. The guests broke into loud laughter. And as for the squire, they say he never went courting again. Tatterhood. Once upon a time, there was a king and a queen who had no children, and this grieved the queen very much. She was always bewailing their lack of a family, and saying how lonesome it was in the palace with no young ones about. The king remarked that if it were young ones she wanted running about, they could invite the children of their kinswoman to stay with them. The queen thought this was a good idea. And soon she had two little nieces romping through the rooms and playing in the palace courtyard. One day, as the queen watched fondly from the window, she saw her two little nieces playing ball with a stranger, a little girl clad in tattered clothes. The queen hurried down the stairs. Little girl, the queen said sharply, this is a palace courtyard. You cannot play here. We asked her to play with us, cried the children, and they ran over to the ragged little girl and took her by the hand. You would not chase me away if you knew the powers my mother has, said the strange little girl. Who is your mother, asked the queen, and what powers does she have? The child pointed to a woman selling eggs in the marketplace outside the palace gates. If she wants to, my mother can tell people how to have children when all else has failed. Now this caught the queen's interest at once. She said, tell your mother I wish to speak to her in the palace. The little girl ran out to the marketplace, and it was not long before a tall, strong woman strode into the queen's sitting room. Your daughter says you have powers, and that you could tell me how I may have children of my own, said the queen. The queen should not listen to a child's chatter, answered the woman. Sit down, said the queen, and she ordered fine food and drinks to be served. And then she told the egg woman she wanted children of her own more than anything in the world. The woman finished her ale, and then said cautiously that perhaps she did know a spell it would do no harm to try. You must have two pails of water brought to you before you go to bed, said the egg woman. In each of them you must wash yourself, and afterward pour the water away under the bed. When you look under the bed the next morning, two flowers will have sprung up, one fair and one rare. The fair one you must eat, but the rare one you must let stand. Mind now, don't you forget that. The queen followed this advice, and the next morning, under the bed, stood two flowers. One was green and oddly shaped. The other was pink and fragrant. The pink flower she ate at once, and it tasted so sweet she promptly ate the other one as well, saying to herself, I don't think it'll either help or hurt. Not long afterward, the queen realized she was with child, and sometime later she had the birthing. First was born a girl who had a wooden spoon in her hand and rode upon a goat. A queer-looking little creature she was, and the moment she came into the world, she bawled out, Mama! If I'm your mama, said the queen, God give me grace to mend my ways. Oh, don't be sorry, said the girl, riding about on the goat. The next one born will be much fairer looking. And so it was. The second twin was born fair and sweet, which pleased the queen very much. The twin sisters were as different as they could be, but they grew up to be very fond of each other. Where one was, the other must be. But the elder twin soon had the nickname Tatterhood, for she was strong, raucous, and careless, and was always racing about on her goat. Her clothes were always torn and mud-spattered, her hood in tatters. No one could keep her in clean, pretty dresses. She insisted on wearing old clothes, and the queen finally gave up and let her dress as she pleased. One Christmas Eve, when the twin sisters were almost grown, there arose a terrific noise and clatter in the gallery outside the queen's room. Tatterhood asked what it was that dashed and crashed about in the passage. The queen told her it was a pack of trolls who had invaded the palace. The queen explained that this happened in the palace every 7 years. There was nothing to be done about the evil creatures. The palace must ignore all trolls and endure their mischief. Tatterhood said, "Oh, nonsense! I will go out and drive them away." Everyone protested. She must leave the trolls alone. They were far too dangerous. But Tatterhood insisted she was not afraid of trolls. She could and would drive them away. She warned the queen that all doors must be kept tight shut. Then she went out into the gallery to chase them. She laid about with the wooden spoon, whacking trolls on head or shoulders, rounding them up to drive them out. The whole palace shook with crashes and shrieking until it seemed the place would fall apart. Just then, her twin sister, who was worried about Tatterhood, opened a door and stuck out her head to see how things were going. Pop! Up came a troll, whipped off her head, and stuck a cat's head on her shoulders instead. The poor princess ran back into the room on all fours and began to moo like a calf. When Tatterhood came back and saw her sister, she was very angry that the queen's attendants had not kept better watch. She scolded them all around and asked what they thought of their carelessness now that her sister had a calf's head. "I'll see if I can get her free from the troll spell," said Tatterhood. "But I'll need a good ship in full trim and well fitted with stores." Now the king realized his daughter Tatterhood was quite extraordinary despite her wild ways, so he did agree to this, but said they must have a captain and a crew. Tatterhood was firm. She would have no captain or crew. She would sail the ship alone. At last, they let her have her way, and Tatterhood sailed off with her sister. With a good wind behind him, she sailed right to the land of trolls and tied up at the landing place. She told her sister to lay quite still on board of the ship, but she herself rode her goat right up to the troll's house. Through an open window, she could see her sister's head on the wall. In a trice, she leapt the goat through the window and into the house, snatched the head and leapt back outside again. She set off with it, and after her came the trolls. They shrieked and swarmed about her like angry bees, but the goat snorted and butted with his horns, and Tatterhood smacked them with her magic spoon until at last they gave up and let her escape. When Tatterhood got safely back to the ship, she took off the calf's head and put her sister's own bonny head back on again. Now her sister was once more human. "Well now, let's sail on and see something of the world," said Tatterhood. Her sister was of the same mind, so they sailed along the coast, stopping at this place and that, and at last they reached a distant kingdom. Tatterhood tied up the ship at the landing place. When the people of the castle saw a strange sail, they sent down messengers to find out who sailed the ship and whence it came. The messengers were startled to find no one on board but Tatterhood, and she was riding around the deck on her goat. When they asked if there was anyone else on board, Tatterhood answered yes. She had her sister with her. The messengers asked to see her, but Tatterhood said no. They then asked, would the sisters come up to the castle for an audience with the king and his two sons? "No," said Tatterhood. "Let them come down to the ship if they wish to see us." And she began to gallop about on her goat until the deck thundered. The elder prince became very curious about the strangers and hastened down to the shore the very next day. When he saw the fair younger twin, he fell promptly in love with her and wanted to marry her. "No, indeed," she declared. "I will not leave my sister Tatterhood. I will not marry until she marries." The prince went glumly back to the castle, for in his opinion, no one would want to marry the odd creature who rode a goat and looked like a ragged beggar. But hospitality must be given to strangers, So the two sisters were invited to a feast at the castle, and the prince begged his younger brother to escort Tatterhood. The younger twin brushed her hair and put on her finest kirtle for the event, but Tatterhood refused to change. "You could wear one of my dresses," said her sister, "instead of that raggedy cloak and old boots." Tatterhood just laughed. "You might take off that tattered hood and soot streaks from your face," said her sister crossly, for she wanted her beloved Tatterhood to look her best. "No," said Tatterhood, "I'll go as I am." All of the people in town turned out to see the strangers riding up to the castle, and what a fine procession it was. At the head rode the prince, and Tatterhood's sister on fine white horses draped with cloth of gold. Next came the prince's brother on a splendid horse with silver trappings, and beside him rode Tatterhood on her goat. "You're not much for conversation," said Tatterhood. "Haven't you anything to say?" "What is there to talk about?" he retorted. They rode on in silence, until finally he burst out, "Why do you ride on that goat instead of a horse?" "Since you ask," said Tatterhood, "I can ride on a horse if I choose." And at once, the goat turned into a fine steed. "Well," the young man's eyes popped open wide, and he turned to look at her with great interest. "Why do you hide your head beneath that ragged hood?" he asked. "Is it a ragged hood? Oh, I can change it if I choose," she said. And there, on long dark hair, was a circlet of gold and tiny pearls. "What an unusual girl you are," he exclaimed. "But that wooden spoon, why do you choose to carry that?" "Is it a spoon?" And in her hand, the spoon turned into a gold-tipped wand of rowan wood. "I see," said the prince's brother. He smiled and hummed a little tune as they rode on. At last, Tatterhood said, "Aren't you going to ask me why I wear these ragged clothes?" "No," said the prince. "It's clear you wear them because you choose to, and when you want to change them, you will." At that, Tatterhood's ragged cloak disappeared, and she was clad in velvet green mantle and kirtle. But the prince just smiled and said, "The color becomes you very well." When the castle loomed up ahead, Tatterhood said to him, "And will you not ask about my face beneath the streaks of soot?" "That too shall be as you choose." As they rode through the castle gates, Tatterhood touched the rowan wand to her face, and the soot streaks disappeared. And whether her face now was lovely or plain, we shall never know, because it didn't matter in the least to the prince's brother or to Tatterhood. But this I can tell you. The feast at the castle was a merry one, and with games and the singing and the dancing lasting for many days. You've been listening to two stories from the book Tatterhood and Other Tales, edited by Ethel Johnson Phelps and published by the Feminist Press. Northern Storytelling is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. Our program is coordinated by Ron Inouye. The executive producer is Carla Canella. And I'm Asia Rizzini.